This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. The radical right has long harbored fantasies about abolishing women's access to abortion, and with Donald Trump in the White House, GOP lawmakers have become emboldened to push for more restrictions on women. Trump's White House counselor, Kellyanne Conway, who's been banned from certain media outlets for lying on the air, said recently that she associates feminism with being pro-abortion and being anti-male. With so much vitriol aimed at women and women's rights coming from the highest echelons of government, what are the implications for tackling existing patriarchy today? My guest Bob Jensen, a longtime feminist, has written a new book exploring this question and challenging men to take up the fight for feminist values. It's called The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men. Bob Jensen is a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He's written a number of other books that we feature on this show, including Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue, and We Are All Apocalyptic Now, on the responsibilities of teaching, preaching, reporting, writing, and speaking out. He joins me to discuss this new book, The End of Patriarchy. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Great. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Sonali. Thanks.
I'd love to start with your own personal journey, because I think it's hard, sadly, for many men in the mainstream of America today to call themselves feminist or to relate to a man who might call himself feminist. It's supposed to be something that only women might adopt, and that too women like Kellyanne Conway reject. So what was your personal journey towards the idea of feminism and calling yourself a radical feminist?
Well, up until the age of 30, I'd been socialized in this society, pretty much like most men, to basically fear and mock feminism. For me, the turning point was when I stumbled back into graduate school and I started meeting feminists and reading feminist work and realized basically everything I'd ever been told about feminism was pretty much a distortion. And the most important thing that happened for me is, while I'd always been told that feminism was a threat to men, you know, whatever feminists were, they were dangerous and they were probably going to hurt me. What I learned from talking to real feminists and reading feminist work was that feminism is actually a gift to men. It's a way that we can not only contribute to a movement for gender justice to make a more just world, but it's also a way that we can help understand our own struggles. Because while, of course, the most intensive and important injuries that patriarchy causes are visited upon girls and women, men struggle with the very toxic norms of masculinity in patriarchy as well. And so, in addition to what I call the argument from justice that you should be a feminist because it's the right thing to do, there's also for men, I think, a very compelling argument from self-interest, that it's in our own self-interest, at least in our long-term self-interest, to actively work against the very system that gives us some short-term benefits, that is patriarchy. And so for me, I don't want to pretend it was all noble and, you know, I was wanted to be on the right side, do the right thing. That's certainly part of the motivation, I hope. But it really was understanding that the embracing not only feminism, but a very radical feminism was in my own self-interest. And that's what really compelled me forward almost 30 years ago now.
There is a popular bumper sticker of feminism as the radical notion that women are people. But is that essentially what it is? How do you define feminism? Because that word is so misunderstood today. Even by young women, a lot of young women feel that feminism is their right to take selfies in scanty clothing. And maybe that's about it.
Right. Well, let's go back to that bumper sticker. You know, feminism is the radical idea that women are human, or women are fully equal citizens, all of that. I actually think you can turn that on its head. In some sense, feminism is also the idea that men are actually human beings. If you look at male behavior in the contemporary world, especially levels of men's violence against women, as well as men's violence against themselves, if you look at the consequences of this very toxic conception of masculinity, and by that I mean a masculinity that is aimed at control, that to be a man is to be in control. And that leads to the goal of conquest. And it's a very aggressive posture toward the world. Let me see, are there any current political leaders who are obsessed with control, conquest, and very aggressive. Well, there might be some. I don't know. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. But that's a very toxic conception of what it means to be a person. And in some ways, for me, feminism was a reminder that that's the cultural overlay. That's not who I am as a human being. I wasn't brought in this world to be, you know, pathologically obsessed with dominance. And so in a way, feminism is also very much about the understanding that men are fully human as well, and that what we become in this culture is not our only option. But of course, you're absolutely right that in the contemporary period, when the major gains of the feminist movement, you know, women's suffrage and eventually things like greater access to education and business opportunities, feminism has become a very muddied term. It means different things to different people. And sometimes, as you point out, all it seems to mean is to be able to self-exploit in a mass consumer culture, which is, of course, not the kind of radical feminism I embrace.
So that's feminism. Then what about the word patriarchy? Your book is entitled The End of Patriarchy. And, you know, there are so many men out there, particularly those who adopt this mantle of being men's rights activists, who say, well, if there was such a thing as a patriarchy, how come I don't have all the power? And they point to, you know, men committing suicide in huge numbers, which is true. Yeah. Men do commit suicide much more than women do. So how do you define patriarchy?
Well, that's an important term. And before I define it, I want to point out that even within feminism, I don't think there's enough talk about patriarchy. At one point, especially in the early second wave women's movement, you know, the late 60s and 70s, the focus was very much on patriarchy, which is just a term that means institutionalized male dominance. A society, as one sociologist defines it, in which the world is male dominated, male identified, and male centered. That's patriarchy. Now, of course, it's obvious that in patriarchy, not every man is dominant over every woman at every moment. It doesn't mean that every man is riding high and on top of the world, because gender is not the only axis that determines people's life outcomes. We also live in a society, in addition to premised on men's exploitation of women, there's also racial exploitation. There's the incredible wealth inequality in capitalism. There's the domination of the world by first world countries, especially the United States. All of those structure people's outcomes. So sure, there are lots of men who are not doing so well. But that's why we've used this phrase intersectional. We look at the intersection of all these systems of power. The other point I'd like to make is when men say, well, look at, you know, men are the victims of violence. Men commit suicide at higher rates, as you pointed out. That's all true. And the question is, where does that come from? Well, it doesn't come from women dominating men. It comes from these very toxic masculinity norms. The reason men are in the sense that they are victims in patriarchy, and we have to be careful about that because, of course, as I said, patriarchy is most devastating to girls and women, not to men. But to the degree men do suffer in patriarchy, and we do, it's not a product of women's control over us. It's a problem of the same toxic, totally unacceptable patriarchal system. And so in that sense, to men's rights activists, I would say, if you want to advocate for the well-being and health of men, you should argue against patriarchy. Hmm.
What is the difference between a feminist and a radical feminist, Bob?
Well, here, you know, those who go back long enough to remember the multitude of descriptors for feminism in the early second wave, Marxist feminism, socialist feminism, psychoanalytic, there were literally dozens of terms to describe different approaches to feminism. I would argue today that it's basically a world dominated by liberal feminism. That is, feminism that generally accepts the outlines of society, especially of capitalism, and seeks to maximize the choices and advantages of women within that system. Okay, if that's what we mean by liberal feminism.
So liberal feminism, basically telling women to lean in so that they can become equal opportunity corporate CEOs.
Yeah. You know, you're the one who brought up Sheryl Sandberg and Lean In. You know, it's a kind of an easy target because obviously feminism that simply says, you know, maximize your own self-interest is a feminism very, very far from the animating spirit of the movements that really fought for women's liberation, not just women's salary increases. Okay. So if the dominant feminism in the culture is liberal feminism, if feminism that challenge is more basic is radical, then I'm very much on the radical side of the fence. Now, there are a lot of disputes within feminism. I don't want to be glib about this, because the kind of feminism I argue for, and I was schooled in many, many years ago, is the subject of a lot of critique, not only from liberal feminists, but then terms like third wave feminists or postmodern feminists. Right? So there's a lot of debate. But for me, when I look at the history of patriarchy and the history of feminist resistance, it's important to recognize that men's control over women's bodies, primarily in terms of reproductive and sexual power, is at the core of a patriarchal system and therefore at the core of feminist resistance. Now, we're familiar with the argument for women's reproductive rights, for the right to an abortion, and radical feminists, like most feminists, are foursquare in support of that. The real issue that sometimes divides feminists comes up around the question of sex. And here I often use the term sexual exploitation industries to indicate that the radical feminist critique of the institution of prostitution, of men's use of women through pornography, is part of a core feminist challenge to the way that men try to claim control of and even sometimes ownership of women's bodies. And so radical feminism has been characterized by a very, very aggressive critique of those sexual exploitation industries. And I would define as the sexual exploitation industries as simply ways that men buy and sell objectified female bodies for sexual pleasure. And from the perspective I come from, this radical feminist tradition, that's simply inconsistent with the goal of gender justice. It's hard to imagine how we could create a just society with, you know, real liberation for not only women, but for men, when one group of people, primarily men, right, can buy and sell another class of people, women, for sexual pleasure. I find it hard to imagine a just society coming out of that, an acceptance of that institution. So the real tension in feminism between liberal and radical is often around those sexual exploitation industries.
And this issue of sexual exploitation and dominance is at the core of what patriarchy has been historically, right? I mean, men's subjugation of women sexually is a historic phenomenon. Yep. And the challenge, of course, lies in, I think, explaining that that era is not over. I mean, it's not as though we're living in some post-rape world where even though it's considered illegal to rape a woman, we still struggle very deeply with these issues, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the points I make in the chapter on sexual assault. You know, nobody endorses rape, at least not nobody in polite circles. But the question is, how do we understand rape? And prior to the feminist critique of men's violence, rape was understood basically as a fairly rare act by deviant men, right? That it was the crazy guys who raped. What feminism helped us understand, especially this radical critique, is that, as I point out in the chapter, rape is normal. Now, by that, I don't mean rape is normal in the sense that it's a norm we want to endorse, but it's normal in two senses. Number one, it happens so often, right, that it is hard to argue that it's an act of deviance, because women's experience of men's violence, not only what is legally defined as rape, of course, but the whole spectrum of what I tend to call sexual intrusion, all of the unwanted sexual attention that women receive in the world. That's everything from, you know, sexually charged messages, online stalking, real world stalking, sexual harassment, coerced sexuality, and then that sex that meets the legal definition of rape. If you consider that whole spectrum of sexual intrusion, basically 100% of the women in this culture experience some form of that. Well, that suggests that rape is so common that it is, in a sense, normal. It's also normal in the sense, I argue, that the domination-subordination dynamic at the heart of patriarchy, this idea that there always has to be a group on top and a group on the bottom, male and female. If you take the underlying philosophy of patriarchy and then create a class with power over another class, well, guess what? The rape, what we legally define as rape, is in many ways only slightly different than a lot of what we call normal sexual interaction. That rape is an exaggerated expression of a fairly normal sexual dynamic in which men are trained to see women as objectified bodies for their own pleasure. Now, legally, you're not supposed to take that body without consent. But the dynamic underneath the way we are socialized as men in patriarchy, again, in a sense, makes rape normal. And that challenge, the radical feminist challenge to how we understand sexual violence, is very important. Nominally, rape is against the law, but it's so common that it's clear that we don't take it seriously as a culture.
Bob, there's so much to discuss in your book, but I want to switch to talking to men, which I think is really, really important at a time today when there is a big enough sector of American society that is not bothered by Donald Trump's overt misogyny that they voted for him. How do you talk to men who equate feminism and a critique of patriarchy with an attack on them as men, and then react with these ideas that men are the real victims, that they need a men's rights movement, and they see someone like Trump as their hero and as leading this charge, even if he doesn't overtly use those terms? How do you talk to somebody who says, real men aren't feminists?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's important to remember that we're also fighting this on the racial front, that this, surge of white ethno-nationalism that Trump tapped into, we also have to figure out how we're going to talk to white people about the reality of white supremacy. So we're up against a lot of struggles. All I can say about talking to men about feminism is, first of all, it's important for those of us who identify as feminists to not be afraid to talk about it. I also think it's very important not to talk about it in jargon-laden terms, right? Every movement develops its own terms, but especially when we're talking to people who aren't from those circles, I think it's very important to use plain language and talk in ways that people can understand. And as I said, I think it's also, in addition to talking, challenging people to be consistent with their own moral principles. And most people, for instance, believe in the dignity of all people. I would argue patriarchy, men's domination of women, is inconsistent with a system that values the dignity of all people. So there are those kind of moral arguments we can make. But I do think talking about how men feel inadequate within patriarchy is very important. Now, that's something that is easier for men to discuss with other men. But the fact is that in this very toxic conception of masculinity, that, this masculinity premised on control and conquest and aggression, men often feel like they're not man enough. Now, I had that feeling growing up because I was a short, skinny kid who didn't meet the expectations of being a real man. I was sadly inept at every organized athletic activity possible. So I knew I wasn't a real man. But what I learned in talking to men over the years is that even, the high school quarterback, the prom king, the guy I thought had it all, that those men are also plagued with this sense of insecurity about not being man enough, because these masculinity norms are so toxic, nobody lives up to them. And so I think one of the things to talk to men about is, if in fact you're suffering, if in fact you feel alienated, if in fact you feel like the world doesn't understand you, question is why? Now, we got to get past the macho posturing to get to that level of conversation. And of course, Donald Trump is sort of the epitome of that macho posturing. And so there is a really ugly space in the culture right now where people are following the leader, quite literally. And in spaces where we do have the ability to talk to men, we have to be emotionally open and honest ourselves, talk in plain language, and try to make men understand that it's the system of male dominance that's the problem, not a lack of power, but the way power is distributed in patriarchy.
Finally, Bob, one of the justifications that a lot of anti-feminists make to defend the existing order and patriarchy is that men and women are biologically different from one another as per our reproductive what we're designed for reproductively, if you will, and that justifies the separation of the sexes and the domination of one sex by another. You talk in your book a lot about this notion of how to tackle the biological differences. So how do you respond to this notion that biology dictates patriarchy?
There's a term, soft patriarchy, that says, listen, it's nice to have equality, but let's face it, you know, men and women have complementary roles in reproduction, which of course they do. And therefore, the argument is they should have complementary roles in society. This is popular all over the world right now. Okay, so the biological differences between men and women are quite clear and obvious. The real question is not reproduction, but the psychological, the intellectual, and the moral differences that may exist between men and women. We do have different kinds of bodies, male and female, and it's possible there might be some psychological, intellectual, or moral differences between male and female. But the fact is we don't know much about that. In fact, we assume there are these amazing differences that men and women feel differently and think differently and reason morally in very different ways. But the evidence is quite different. The evidence suggests there are very few differences in that realm between men and women. And those are the only differences that could make it justifiable to have different roles for men and women in the economy or something like that. So, you know, the research suggests that this gender difference theory is in fact unsupported and that men and women are pretty much more the same than we are different. Now, you know, nobody really knows the answer, but it's like a lot of questions in human society. We don't have definitive answers. We have experience and we have the evidence of what happens when you start to create a system in which one group is allowed to claim dominance over another. That never ends well. Any hierarchy, and this is another thing I learned from feminism, that not just hierarchy in the sex gender world, but hierarchy of any kind, it has to be justified, not by theology and not by claims about nature, but has to be justified in very serious moral and empirical terms. And there are no justifications for these hierarchies, whether we're talking about gender or race or hierarchies in the economy or hierarchies between different regions of the world. All of these are assertions of dominance based on no justifiable principle or evidence. And gender is just another one of these we have to constantly fight against.
Bob Jensen, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Great, Sonali. The conversations with you are always so rich. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Robert Jensen is a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He's written a number of books, and he has been speaking to us about his latest one, The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at our website. That's risingupwithsonali.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.